Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey, this is former Blue Devil O-lineman Matt Skura. You're listening to Basketball Conference, the ACC football podcast. Go Duke, go ACC.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC football podcast. My name's Joey Weaver. He's Mike McDaniel. Mike, it's been a week or two. Stuff has happened since the last time we talked. Should we bring somebody on to talk about it?
Dan Rubin's back.
Hey, Dan.
BCEagles.com. Welcome back, Dan.
I got kicked out to the garage, guys, because I was too loud when we were doing the last show. So we are recording this one in the Rubin family broadcast studio known as the garage.
Joey, I was going to say, this is like our third Boston College podcast in like the last 2.5 weeks.
You sound surprised saying that. This has always been a Boston College podcast. So
that's right.
I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
Noted BC Boston College Homer.
BC Podcast ACC, baby.
Noted Boston College Homer. Mike McDaniel is a co-host here.
I've always loved them.
You know. Dan, welcome back. Last time we talked was shortly in the wake of Jeff Hafley announcing his, I guess we'll call it his resignation. He was going to be leaving Boston College to go to Green Bay to be the defensive coordinator for the Packers, which put Boston College in kind of an oddly timed coaching search. And one of the things we talked about when we discussed was potential candidates. And you were pretty staunch at the time. And of course, you, for the people that are unaware, this is their first podcast, whatever, Dan is an employee of the athletic department. So there's only so much he can say. There's certain ways you got to address things. But at the time, you seemed very non-confident of what direction this whole coaching search was going to go. It was kind of weird timing, different athletic director than when Jeff Hafley was hired. One of the names that we brought up was Bill O'Brien, who has since now been announced as the full-time head coach moving forward for the Boston College Eagles. I guess, Dan, what was your initial reaction when you heard that? Were you surprised at all? Was that just totally expected? You know, were you happy, excited? Were you like kind of concerned? What was your initial feeling coming out of that announcement when it happened from Boston College?
I honestly do think it was confusion. I think it was a little bit of confusion, a little bit of excitement. There was a lot of excitement to this that it happened so quickly. But the pace and the tempo of everything left me a little like I was still trying to wrap my head around the fact that they were going to have a new coach, try to figure out, okay, what happens with the assistants? They named Paul Rhodes to be the interim, and he was kind of taking over the administrative duties. The portal thing opens, and who's going to leave? Do you lose your quarterback? And I remember when I talked to you guys, it was in the first 24 hours, and these were all the same questions that I had virtually looking at you and saying, I don't know what's going to happen, and the news cycle was going to change day to day, and you know, people will talk on it and be like, well, this is what we knew was going to happen, and this is what nobody knew what was going to happen. It was so played so tight that even the people who I would look at and say, what's going on, like just from an informational standpoint, like what's out there, what's known, there were so many different reports, it was almost impossible to follow. And then we wind up in a situation where by the end of a weekend you hear that they're interviewing. They interviewed, I think it was 6 or 10 candidates, whatever it was. From that moment, it moved quickly to pare the list down to in person to continue going. I don't know when Bill O'Brien kind of came up. It does not sound like, based off of everything, that he was the target. He was not the initial target. I don't think they had an initial target when they started the interviews. I think that the applicant pool, from what I've been told and what we've heard, was very deep. And when the job opened, he was actually told by a lot of people, including his wife, as he mentioned today, hey, you should really look at this one. This one could be the right fit. And then he established himself as kind of the front runner candidate. And they looked at a couple of other people along the way. And the athletic director, Blake James, said today, this was a guy who the first time he talked to him, he started to differentiate himself. And then it became clear after conversations that he was the guy. I think it benefited that the announcement came a week before he had the introductory press conference, which if we're recording on a Thursday, it was today. We had about a week because he had the ACC meetings that he had to get to. So it allowed you to kind of let the dust settle, figure out what was going on and the fact that your quarterback was staying and everything else kind of had to peter down over the course of a week, but it went week to 2 weeks, but it was confusion. Then it was excitement. Now it's energy. There's a lot of energy in the program right now. And I think that it is a continuation of the energy that had been built under Jeff Hafley. It's not a reboot. It's not a reset. It's not anything like that. They're going to try and take what he was building and continue to build on it using a new program.
Feels like, you know, Bill O'Brien emerges as the guy, right? And it feels like, you know, he was just announced as the OC at Ohio State like a month ago.
What was your favorite play that Bill O'Brien called at Ohio State?
Yeah. What was your favorite recruit that he called? Like
Spider 2Y Banana.
Yeah. He ends up in just like a job I do feel like is tailor made for him, right? I mean, he's cut his teeth in the New England area. He's coached for Belichick a couple different times, including this past season. And he's had success at the college level too, right? So like he's had the success at the NFL level. He just engineered two offenses at Alabama within the last few years that, you know, were scoring 40 points per game. Like he won Bryce Young a Heisman Trophy. Ryan Day is obviously no dummy, right? Bringing Bill O'Brien in. This guy can obviously still coach at the college level. I almost feel like BC might have upgraded here a little bit.
I think there's the potential for it. I think that it's also a different style of coach. The one thing that kind of needs to be said, and again, this was addressed today, which was in the press conference, which was that Bill O'Brien said he couldn't have thanked Ryan Day enough for being patient while the process was playing out, understanding what he was doing, understanding what was happening. I personally don't think it hurt that Ryan Day was an offensive coordinator at Boston College and had coached at BC a couple of times. And on top of that was probably one of the nicer, better coaches that when I say nice guy, great coach, local guy. Like when Jeff Hafley took the job, the fact that he was coming from Ohio State, like Ryan Day pretty much sold him on BC. Said like, this is a great place. This is where you'll be happy. And you know, the people, like he sold Jeff Hafley on it a bit. And when Bill O'Brien was going to look at the BC job, he mentioned that Ryan Day was patient and embraced the process. And I think that's part of what made it such an easy move or easy decision. I also think that there is an upgrade in there. And that's not a knock against Jeff Hafley by any stretch of the imagination. The term that I used was BC is shaking Sinatra's hand. This is like when you hear the term in Vegas, he shook Sinatra's hand. It was one of those. It was the group of guys in Vegas that worked with Sinatra. They were, you know, usually it's the line from Ocean's 13. You should know better. You shook Sinatra's hand when they say that. Like that's the special. This is a coach who coached Tom Brady and coached with Bill Belichick. No matter how you try to slice the fact that they didn't win the Super Bowl, thanks a lot, New York Giants, but they. He shook Sinatra's hand, and BC, no matter what happened with the Patriots last year, wound up in a position where they were able to hire a head coach who won four division championships with the Houston Texans, who stabilized the Penn State program after that horrible disaster of the end of Joe Paterno. That was he was the guy who stepped in and fixed the program, cleaned it up after that. Mm-hmm. And with the Sandusky scandal, and you have that coach here who coached
Martin's there. Hand, Dan, yeah. Nick Saban. Coach for Saban.
Exactly. He's been to the mountaintop with the best coaches in football history, and you're getting him. You take that 100 times out of 100.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a knock against anybody. You're taking that guy when he's available and he wants to come, you're taking him.
It is funny to me hearing you say, Dan, that he was not like the initial focus of the search, because this did take probably the better part of a week, maybe even a little bit more than a week, if I'm trying to remember right, of the
after
timeline.
We recorded.
Of how long this all took. And yet there were like three separate occasions that I feel like I saw things of like Bill O'Brien is like the main target of this search. And then it came back like they're going to interview some more candidates. And then it was like Bill O'Brien is the main candidate for Boston College. And they've got other interviews scheduled this weekend. And it was like, I guess I don't know if you have any insights on like what happened there or what the meaning of all that was. But it was just kind of odd to me that, yeah, like this is where they ended up. And it seemed like they were forecasting this or kind of telegraphing it, you know, almost a week ahead of time. And yet they kept seemingly interviewing other candidates.
Yeah. And I don't think that Bill O'Brien was necessarily that close to being when the initial reports were coming out on whatever it was Sunday. It was, oh, Bill O'Brien's going to be wrapped up. I don't think he was the top candidate at that time. Like I objectively don't think that personally.
Was doing some work.
I don't. Well, the thing is based on what Bill O'Brien today said, he was like when he came to do interviews or he was coming back home to Massachusetts, he was driving from Columbus, Ohio. So to me, it's
driving?
He said he literally got in the car and drove from Columbus, Ohio back to Massachusetts and then turned around and drove back.
That's because he knew he wasn't going back.
So
I'm the man who knows he's not going back.
He drove both places.
I'm telling
renting
you,
a car.
So
you can't tell me the guy was inches away from signing if he was in a car somewhere near Buffalo, New York. Like
my only argument for that is if that is his personal car that he's driving back from Columbus to the Massachusetts area, right? And like back to BC. That's a sign of a man who knows he is not going back to Columbus. Like,
yeah,
if he's flying to Massachusetts, right? If he's flying to Massachusetts and his personal car is in Columbus, Ohio, right? That's a sign of a guy who is not going back to Columbus.
To be fair, his family was still out here. So there was a...
That's another question I had. Do you still keep the house?
The house, so the family, he was always going to keep his family. When he was at Alabama, I believe his family stayed up here. And he does have a kid who has his son's 21 years old. He has a son who has a medical condition who I'm sure, you know, stays with family up here, wasn't at the press conference today. I can't speak to any part of that, like the experience they have with
very
with
serious,
any of that.
Very serious and unique medical condition.
Yeah. Right. So his family stayed here when he was, but I do know that based on what the Boston Globe was reporting, Trevor Haas wrote a really good story about the whole thing on the Boston Globe. He was looking at houses when he got the call to, you know, start the process or that BC was open. So he was looking. I don't think he was as close as people on Sunday were saying, like Sunday, Monday. I don't believe it was that close. I really don't. And a person, like I said, I don't have any information. The information was kept tight to the vest the whole way. And I was trying to find information and I couldn't get it. Like it was a really close to the vest. And because I don't think just from watching coaching searches around the country, when names leak out, if it doesn't happen, like UMass basketball had this happen where they had a coach who was literally at the press conference, who was ready to walk out on stage and then didn't take the job. Like until the ink is dry on the contract, saying that it's inches away or that it's going to happen or this, it just doesn't work for me personally. And there really were no indications that like it was coming that quickly. So and to be fair, they had to go through their due process. You have to make sure it all lines up. I think the process moved incredibly fast. But I also know that there were a lot of candidates that were interested. There were, you know, 10 candidates that interviewed. I wish I could have been a fly on the wall when the committee got together, because they, when it happened, they started moving quickly. But I don't think it was 48 hours later they're like, we're going to get Bill O'Brien. I think they had to go through seeing how much he had the, seeing how much he wanted to come to this job, seeing how, seeing if he was the right guy. I mean, there are plenty of coaches out there that who are tremendous coaches who might not be the right guy for a particular program. And they have to establish that they are good for that unique type of program and that they can succeed under the auspices that the university is going to set forward. Because not everybody's going to, you know, the best coaches for a Boston College and the best coaches for an Army or best coach for an Alabama or a Texas are not compatible with one another to a degree. And you have to figure out how compatible they can be before you run and make that type of financial commitment that you're going to have to make to a coach for X amount of years.
What do you feel like? I mean, we talked about how we think it, we think it's an upgrade in terms of just like, you talk about very different coach, right, from Halfley. What do you feel like the biggest differences are? Because like I'll say like Halfley elevated the program from a recruiting standpoint in ways that we really hadn't seen Boston College recruit really ever. And now you have a guy in Bill O'Brien who, you know, recruited well at Penn State in a different era of college football. I mean, it seems preposterous to say that because it's like within the last 15 years, but it's like, you know, it's like basically when Jesus walked the earth 15 years ago in this sport. A very different era of college football. He recruited well, and then like he recruited well at Bama, but that was Saban. That recruits itself.
I'm gonna go to sleep, and I'm gonna recruit well for Bama.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And the same thing would have happened
at all for Bama.
And the same thing would have happened at Ohio State with Ryan Day. It would have been the same thing. So, I mean, how do you think this is going to look from a recruiting standpoint relative to Jeff Halfley, and then from a coaching standpoint, X's and O's wise? What do you think the biggest difference is going to be, other than, you know, the obvious, which is experience and who he's coached with in the past?
The recruiting part, I think, is kind of the easiest thing to answer, because he said you got to embrace it. Like, you got to embrace the whole process now. You've got to embrace all the different pieces of it. And to a degree, I think that feels to a lot of people who hear that, like Jeff Halfley, who readily said, this was not what he got into. Like, he said it a couple of times, like, this was not what he expected when he got into coaching college or came back to college, and not what he maybe would have wanted, but it is the landscape. And that you do, like he said that, I know, in interviews, I think he said it on, you know, podcast interviews, and, you know, there are reports that he said it on the way to the Green Bay Packers, you know, that was something that was a part of it. And I don't know how much I believe versus disbelieve it. I think that my conversations with him and interviews with him made me feel like he enjoyed the process, but indeed it was a lot more than even when he came back to Ohio State. That said, it wasn't that he didn't embrace it. It's that it was a part of it that maybe developed more and more over time. And if you're any college coach and you can't handle or embrace the era of which we live in, then you're not going to want to coach college football anymore. The part of it that I will say that kind of makes me interested in what's going to happen is how, you know, Coach O'Brien said, you got to embrace it. And if you don't embrace it, what are you doing? Like, don't do this. Is that with the collective and getting it stood off the ground, is that he's coming into a situation where the collective exists, and he is going to come into a situation in NIL where it's not new. We don't know what's going to happen with it, but it's not new. So what happens from here, what happens with how much money gets raised, who wants this, who wants that, that much, I don't know. I know that BC will never be a place that, you know, if you have a kid who just wants $150,000 or, you know, a suitcase in a car, that kid's probably not coming to Boston College anyway. Like, that kid was never coming to Boston College in the first place. That kid was never going to be recruited for BC. That kid was not the material, and that's fine. Like, I want to make clear, that's not high horse Boston College. That's fine. That's totally fine. If he finds a program that's like that, I think that's great.
Majority of the ACC.
I think, yeah, I think if you're a kid and you want, and you just want $150,000 and a Maserati, go for it. Like, get whatever you can that you're more than, that is your right to go do it. Boston College has always had the kids who are tough, diamonds in the rough, you know.
96 Camry, baby.
Yeah, you know what? You could take that Camry for 250,000 miles and it'll get you where you need to go. And so I think that's always going to be the case from and you're going to get NFL players out of the deal. Like, you're going to get first round picks. You just have to refine them a bit and you can win and you're going to win, but that's what BC's always been. Now, I do think from a football standpoint, you're also going from a first time head coach who had a background in defensive backs to an offensive coach with head coaching experience who coached Tom Brady. So you're going to look very different. And whether or not that means you're going to look like a pro style offense, a college, you are going to have concepts that were not used in the past. And not a knock, but you are going to have a very different football team next year because it's just what you're getting. And that is what I think is probably the most exciting part because of the pieces that are coming back. Is if Bill O'Brien can construct an offense around Tom Brady, very interested what he can do here. Now, granted, I could probably construct an offense around Tom Brady. Here, Tom, here's the ball. Go win a Super Bowl. You
Tom
can
Brady
do it.
Could construct an offense around you, Dan. Like that's
yeah, it's a trick.
But you're getting Boston College level intelligence with a coach who is ready to build a team around the intelligent style. Like that's exciting to me.
Yep, yep. Dan, last thing I had for you, curious to know. You said that you were at the intro press conference today, just a few hours ago. Any sort of other interesting little nuggets or anything else you have to share with us from what was discussed at that press conference or even things maybe anything you could allude to that maybe was said off the record before or after that conference was held?
I can tell you that I had a 10 to 15 minute conversation with Mike Reese from ESPN and he was excited. And he was excited for BC. And he was like, well, the joke is now, he goes, Bill, who went to Brown, finally said, you know, hey, I got into BC. I did it, everybody. And I was like, that's a great line because he went to an Ivy League. So, but the line that I, the thing that I think I love the most about the intro press conference was just I have never worked with Boston College football at a time when the coach was a Boston guy. Like there's elements of Steve Addazio that where he was a New Englander, he was from Connecticut and, you know, played college football in Connecticut, was a Northeast guy, but then he was also a Florida coach. And, you know, he was, even as much as he was a Northeast guy, he wasn't a Boston guy. Like there is something to that. And Bill O'Brien is the sense of humor, the edge, like that is something that we have up here that he has. And the edge that he brings into a press conference and the intensity that he brings, like he's one of us. And for a football program that has not had that for decades, that's a part of it that I think a lot of people are going to get used to very quickly. Up here, like he is, his wit, his where he's from, you're not going to be able to pull a fast one on him up here. And that's just not, it's a whole new ball game. And it is, I felt like it was one of those where if I ask a wrong question, I was like, I want to make sure I know what I'm talking about and I know what I'm asking, because not that I think he's going to rip my head off, but you know, he has that aura and that presence of one of those guys that was like, hey pal, what are you doing? Like, that's this is the town. We are working with College Football the Town Edition. I can't tell you about it, but we're gonna hurt some people.
For a guy who has coached for Belichick, this is the last thing I have, and it's just kind of an add-on, right? Like, guy who's coached with Belichick, he's coached with Saban, he's led his own program at Penn State, he was a head coach in the NFL with the Texans. Cup of coffee with Ryan Day, obviously. he's in his mid-50s. This feels to me, Dan, I'm curious to see if you agree or, you know, if people kind of up there in the Boston area agree with this. To me, this feels like a destination job for O'Brien. Like, you see these coaches who go to these middle-of-the-road Power 5 schools, right? And in this day and age, with NIL and recruiting, you know, coaches tend to look around maybe even a little bit more in the current state. I mean, we saw it today, right? Sean Elliott leaving Georgia State because, you know, we know that he's on the hot seat there. And, you know, he's leaving his head coaching job for an assistant coaching job at South Carolina.
Position coach job.
A position coach job. Not even like an assistant head coach job, like a position coach job. And these guys are like resetting their clock, but he's also like, because he's about to get fired there, but also he's complaining about NIL and everything else. And we're seeing that across the sport right now, right? But I think we're seeing less and less of guys like Bill O'Brien who are going into a situation. And it just feels like, to me, this is like a destination job. This is like, if things go well, this is like a long haul hire. He can build the program how he wants to build it, as long as he's making bowl games at minimum, which I feel like just with him as a coach and what BC has been and kind of what Halfley has left him, I feel like is a good runway to begin with. But this feels like his dream scenario at this point in his career. Do you agree with that?
He said it was. And I know every coach says, this is the job that I, you know, love, or, you know, this is the place that I've always wanted to be. So, you know, every intro press conference is the same thing. Like, everyone says, this is my dream job. But even the last couple coaches too, like Steve Adazio said it was a dream job. And I believe it was for him, to being a Northeast guy. Jeff Halfley, it was his first job. Coming, he wanted to come back to college. He wanted to be in it. I think that he joined up with BC to be there forever. Like, he wanted to be there forever. And then the NFL came calling, and it's really hard to turn that down. And he was open with the school. I think the school was open with him. They left it, like I said, they parted on really, really good terms. Even like Blake James said, unless he's playing the Minnesota Vikings, because Blake's James, a Minnesota Vikings fan, I wish him nothing but the best. And I was sitting there thinking, see, I like that. There's not enough of that in the modern era. But it's different. It's different with Bill O'Brien. I mean, his kid goes to Tufts. I know I mentioned that. His wife went to BC. I think his sister-in-law went to BC. I think his niece went to BC. He's a guy who understands it. Like, he understands Boston College because it's in his family. Like, it's not like it's, like, you hear about that with West Point, right? Like, guys go to West Point or they coach, like, oh, my family went here. And it's in their blood. And to me, that's kind of the thing is he – yeah, you go back even, he's in his 50s, and you go back even to when he was in high school at St. John's Prep. Like, St. John's Prep, barf, is the best high school program in Massachusetts.
Barf. Why barf, Dan? Why?
But because Malden Catholic went like 6 years without scoring a point against them. So,
it's alma mater.
Not great. My beloved Lancers did not do good in those years. But he gets it, and like he gets our weird traffic patterns. Like, he understands this is what Boston College is, and family's here. Like, his dad's still up here. His dad was at the press conference. His brothers were at the press conference. Like, this is, and I know a lot of them all show up, but it's a little different when they're like not flying in from out of town and they're literally coming in from the Cape. Like, this is a different attitude to this program that everybody who was there understood that, like I said, it's one of us. It's not like it's and like I said, he's coming from the Patriots, from a successful Patriots, not like the early 1990s Patriots. Like, he's coming from the Patriots. He's coming from, you know, having won in other places. And now he's coming home. Like, this is for me, and I understand this being from up here, and I know other places in the country have that same feeling. You can't leave. Like, you try really hard, But the big joke is that I moved outside one highway. Like, I moved one exit outside the wrong highway, and now I'm 25 minutes from the city, and now I'm dead. I'm gone forever. But, like, it's one of those things where you go out and you run into everyone you know, and all the rumors and all the stories about Boston are true. And now one of our Boston guys is our head coach. I just slipped my accent there. That's not great. Oh, God.
I'll say maybe it's the accent, Dan, but the way you describe him, I just assume he's a Duncan guy. I assume he is.
Gotta
be. You got to go to Cumberland Farms to get the 99 cent coffee. Although the Dunkin's commercial, still not as good as the Casey Affleck Christmas one. That's me. I know too many people from those commercials who look exactly like that. Yeah, I wake up, have a pack of Parliaments, get a large coffee, have a cruller, and then.
I wasn't sure if you're talking about an actual commercial or the Saturday Night Live skit, because
The Saturday Night Live skit. That was it. That was the around Christmas time with Casey Affleck. Yeah, that's best part of my days when I'm at Dunkin'. Is that sad? Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Fantastic. Mike, that's all I got for Dan. Anything else while we got him?
I think we're good. Dan, appreciate it, man.
All I know is I look forward to this year coming in and hopefully learning a whole bunch of Patriot stories that I can share with Mike.
That's all I want out of this. Yeah.
I want all of them. I want them all. I want to know just how good those teams really were. And then I could tell Mike that Manningham with the sideline catch. I've kind of purged most of this from my memory.
Yeah, that was Manningham.
Yeah. He was definitely out of bounds.
I like that. I'll go with that version of history.
It's not like
Kyle Shanahan in a big game, right, Joey?
Dude, if I can't be happy, Kyle Shanahan shouldn't get to be happy either. Like, I was a big old Chiefs fan there on Sunday and fully satisfied with the outcome. Like, I'm 100% satisfied watching him get his heart broken again.
That's what he does.
You know what the best part of all of this is, too, is that Bill O'Brien's first game, now that the schedule came out, Labor Day weekend at Florida State.
Welcome.
Win that game, he'll never buy a Dunkin's coffee again.
This is the time. I mean, hey, it's the time to get him.
Yep.
It's the time to get him now. Returning a bunch of players. Going to be a rebuild. You get him in the opener when they'll be unequivocally worse than they'll be in November.
Second game of the year for Florida State.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, second. Yeah, because Florida State goes and plays Georgia Tech in Ireland. Thank you for reminding me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, week two.
Back from Dublin.
Week one, but yes. Yep.
And who are we all kidding? That's our country. That's Boston. Listen, I understand that we lost to Georgia Tech over there. Fourth and 26.
Man, I forgot about that one. Neither one of you will forget that one. I was in
person on my honeymoon and could not believe Quay Cersei caught that ball.
We don't need to talk about what condition I was in, but let's just say that there were a lot of mimosas involved. a significant amount went over my buddy's place, and he said that was the place. I think that might have been the day that we ordered pizza from the same place twice.
You've told that story, yes. I think, on this podcast.
Yes, yep. Yeah, we were. Yeah, that was a tough day. Everyone took a nap. Yeah,
what a day! But,
hey, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to see what happens with the staff announcements that have come out. I'm looking forward to spring ball. And I know I said earlier it was a lot of nerves and stuff. Hey, look, there's still nerves. They still got to go out and prove it, and they still got to go out and show what they got with a new coach and make sure this all works. And that's the exciting part of it to me is. Because we don't know what's going to happen. And we all expect it to go a certain way. We're all happy now. But, you know, I've been happy before, and I've seen it go downhill before. And I've been happy before and seen it go well. So I'm interested, and I'm in. Like, I'm in with it. I'm bought in. I'm letting myself kind of get excited about it. And like I said, I know I wrote it, but I was like, I know I've said it before that this coach at Boston College, this type of coach. When was the last time you had a guy who actively wanted? When was the last time you had a coach of this caliber with this resume? I don't think ever at BC. And that is not a knock against any coach they've ever had. I think you have to go back to maybe when Bob Cousy and Chuck Daly coached the basketball team.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Bob Cousy. Wow.
Plumbers and firefighters, as JJ Redick would say.
Yeah. And Chuck Daly, was not the Chuck Daly of the Bad Boy Pistons by then. He was just a college coach.
Just a guy.
he was just a guy.
Dan, really appreciate you coming on. You want to tell the people real quick where they can find your stuff?
BCEagles.com and on Twitter/X/ElonFest. It is at BC Dan Rubin. We're gonna be pumping out some content on there too, and the podcast for Boston is it's the name of it, literally the podcast for Boston is the name of the podcast. If you look up for the podcast based on for the team, which was Jeff Hafley's big axiom on the football program, that's what it was called on the under the podcast for Boston. We got all the episodes there, and with our interviews, players. We were doing interviews with Coach Hafley last year. Maybe that's why he left. He was doing interviews with me. I mean, that's enough to make you want to run back to the NFL. But you know that we were on there. We got some great stuff. Annabelle Hasselbeck, who's one of the lacrosse players, puts up a lot of stuff. You may conceivably recognize her last name is.
I recognize that last name.
Yeah.
But she's
family lineage there.
Yes. But she's on. Her and her sister are both part of the lacrosse team, which is I think ranked number two in the country and number one hockey team. So there's a lot of good stuff going on to whet your appetite. And I know when I'm done with you guys, I'm probably gonna go back and try to figure out how the basketball team gets itself to 18-19 wins this year and gets itself into the NIT because, you know, hey, they're still playing basketball games too. And I'm maybe looking forward to getting down to DC in March. I don't think my wife's going to let me. I've already
it's
been
worth a shot though.
It's worth a shot. I'm out in the garage with I'm currently using a cozy coupe as a footrest, and you guys can see my snow shovel and hockey skates over my shoulder.
Our conversations are so different than they were.
Way different. I have a cozy coupe over here to my right, Dan. So yeah, I'm not using cozy it as a footrest, but
no, yeah, I'm currently in a cozy coupe. Yeah, with my feet. So yep, that's But hey, we got lawn equipment behind me. This is where we're at now.
Life's funny that way.
Sure is.
Dan, you're the best. Really appreciate it. You want to come back on sometime soon? Talk more Boston College.
The more stuff I find out, the more stuff I know. I will be more than happy to spend my evenings with you two fine gentlemen.
There you go. Thank you, Dan. Really appreciate it. Talk to you soon. All right.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, guys.
Mike, that was Dan Rubin. What was your any reactions that you had regarding the hiring of Bill O'Brien? And you mentioned, and I think you and I kind of talked about this a little bit off air, but you know, you felt like this was a really strong hire for Boston College. Maybe not a full on A+, but a pretty high on the spectrum.
Yeah, for sure. So, a couple things, right? The thing Dan mentioned about Bill O'Brien, in Dan's opinion, and I don't. And Dan's going to listen back to this, and he knows I would tell him this to his face. I don't believe him for a second when he says he doesn't know for sure if O'Brien was or wasn't a serious candidate when it was being reported. Dan's full of it. I know that he knew. Dan wouldn't have made that comment about, oh, I'm not sure O'Brien was like locked in as the guy at that time. I don't think he was their number one choice. Dan works for the athletic department. I know he's got some info there. Okay. I know he does.
I personally was laughing at the idea of O'Brien getting in an 03 Honda Accord and driving back and forth from Columbus to Boston.
My theory.
To interview, as if my man, who was a head coach of an NFL franchise for 8 years, has to schlum it from Columbus to Boston.
My theory has the most, it holds the most water. But he had his car in Columbus, and he knew he wasn't going back. That was my theory.
That makes way more sense to me than, well, we had to wait for him to drive from Columbus to interview here to see if we wanted to have, like, come on. Are you kidding me?
Was this 1936? No. I mean, that part of it, too, was pretty funny. I think if that story is actually true, that he was driving from Columbus, I do think it's because he knew he was taking the job and he was leaving Ryan Day and the Ohio State staff. Like, I think that's, if that actually happened where he was driving halfway across the country, not halfway across the country, I guess, but if he was driving like 12 hours or whatever it is from Columbus to Boston or Chestnut Hill, you know, it's because he knew he was not going back to Columbus, right?
He does give 03 Honda Accord energy, though.
That's right. I mean, that's very true. He does. Mid-50s, a little bit of a curmudgeon. A little bit set in his ways. Back to the other part of it, though. I that was the most interesting piece to me, was when Dan said that he doesn't think O'Brien was Boston College's first choice. And that's interesting to me, because when we talked about candidates, you know, we've had a few different podcasts now that we've talked about this Boston College search. You and I recorded one the night that it opened. We recorded with Dan the following night, where it was very early in the coaching search, obviously. And then we recorded with Dan this evening. Mm-hmm. You and I had that podcast where the two of us talked together about, you know, potential candidates. And, you know, I threw out the, oh, the long shot candidate that nobody's talking about is Brian Flores. But the second name that I mentioned that I thought actually made a lot of sense was Bill O'Brien. He was like at the top of mind for me. So I'm curious who was at the top of mind for Boston College, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, who were they thinking of other than Bill O'Brien? I mean, I know Al Washington was in the mix. He was on the prior staff. Maybe that was who they were thinking of potentially hiring. But if you have an opportunity to get Bill O'Brien with the experience that he's had, I think you have to go get him, right? And I think the hire ultimately made a lot of sense. And I think it's high upside because of all the reasons we just mentioned with Dan. He knows the area incredibly well. From there, etc. Coach with Belichick. Like, I don't want to overrate coaching with Bill Belichick, because NFL is very different from the college game. But I think it's important in this sense that, like, knowing Boston College's place, and I mentioned this, we actually had a discussion about this on the prior podcast, but like having an understanding of Boston College's place in that market, I think is really, really important. Not only for like the high schools, but understanding that like that's a pro sports town.
Yeah, and 100%.
From a marketing standpoint and getting kids to come to your school standpoint for recruiting, you have to show why Boston College matters, right? You have to show like why coming here is something that is in your best interest as a high school athlete. Whether you're from the New England area or not, like, you've got to sell that university. And I think having an understanding of Boston College's place in a pro sports town, living it every day on both sides of the aisle, right? Living it on the New England Patriots side at the professional level, then living it on the flip side in Boston College at Chestnut Hill, like, having that understanding, I think, is really, really important.
Yeah.
The fact that the culture stuff that we can get into, like, I think a lot of that stuff makes this a hire that makes sense, and then we'll see kind of what the ceiling is after that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to deny at all the fact that like Bill O'Brien is an aggressively Boston man, right? Like he was, yes. he was b- born in Boston, grew up there. He coached for the Patriots there for a long time. He went to Brown. Like, he has spent a lot of his life in Boston. Like, he gets the area. He understands it. He is of that area. And the thing that I mentioned to Dan, I think, was, you know, about him being a little bit prickly or being very direct, I think, as a person that it turned people off here in Houston when he was the head coach of the Texans. And I think kind of gives people a certain idea. I think that style might play pretty well in Boston, actually. Like, yeah, that direct personality and that communication style, like, actually might work pretty well there. That's fine.
It's kind of what Dan said with, like, yeah, he's got like the Boston attitude in a way, yeah, for lack of a better term.
A lot of the country sees that and thinks, oh, this guy's a jerk. But like the local media there is like, this is just how we talk to each other. Like that's fine. Like, you know, so that's good. I guess the thing that I was curious to get your take on was my initial reaction when I first heard, and I think we alluded to this with Dan, one of the first names that we heard that was a potential candidate or a front runner was Bill O'Brien. And when I heard that, my antenna went up of like, this guy's agent works so much harder than anybody's agent out there, because it just seems like any job that comes available, college, NFL, head coach, coordinator, whatever, Bill O'Brien is interested in the job. That's been a constant thing for like 4 or 5 years now. And so there was an immediate like sense of like calling BS on it, because it's like, well, of course he's interested, because he's interested in everything and nothing. And his agent's just trying to get him a raise. Like, did you ever get that sense the way that I maybe did?
I didn't, only because of the thing I mentioned with Dan, where like, I thought that this was, if he was going to be a head coach again, pro level, college level, whatever. I mean, there would have been, I think at this stage, kind of where he's at, I think there obviously would have been more opportunities at the college level for him in terms of just being a head coach. Mm-hmm. If he was going to be a head coach at the college level, like, this, I think, is the job that was tailor-made for him, mm-hmm, in terms of like, he sees it as a destination job. Dan got that sense. O'Brien said it today, which in a lot of cases, I don't put a whole lot of stock in, because like Dan mentioned, every coach always says that in the introductory press conference. This is where I want to be. This is my job, whatever. But like, this job makes too much sense. Boston guy, all the reasons you mentioned, played at Brown, has a kid at Tufts, born in Boston, raised kids in Boston, family still lives there, right? You know, son who, you know, receives his medical needs at some of the finest hospitals in the country. In the, mm-hmm, Boston area. Like, he is a Boston guy. Yeah. So that's, you know, when I heard that he was a candidate, it was like, okay, I can understand why BC is interested in him, right? Off the jump. It was like, of course, Boston College is interested in him. That would be a coup for them. Because like Dan mentioned, who is Boston College historically gotten that has the credentials that Bill O'Brien has? I mean, Dan, a BC alum, can't name one. Couldn't name one.
Yeah.
I mean, this is probably the most accomplished coach they've, like, entering the job that Boston College has ever had.
At the time that they hired them.
Yes.
Tom Coughlin was also a head coach at Boston,
right,
College.
Right. At the time of hiring. Of course.
But,
right.
But that happened after the fact. But yeah, right, at the time that they brought him in, I'm not sure I could ever find anybody that
an important
had a
distinguishing
decent
point.
Argument, you know,
yep,
going against what Bill O'Brien has on his resume at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, to finish, I thought, you know, I thought BC would be very interested. Of course they would be. They're going to be spraying the board. Weird time to hire a coach. They got to just see who is interested, right? So they're going to cast a very wide net. And Dan mentioned that. Made a lot of sense to me. Of course they would. Bill O'Brien being interested, like it being mutual interest, I bought right away. I was like, you know what? The only reason why I was a little skeptical is because like he just got to Ohio State. But again, that's like a matter of pay. And it's also a matter of fit. The Ryan Day point of like Ryan Day coaching at BC in the past, him being on the same staff as Halfley. I thought Dan's point about Ryan Day kind of selling Halfley on BC a little bit was very interesting. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't he sell Bill O'Brien on it and be like supportive of that move? And also, like, Ohio State knew this was coming too. I mean, it, basically immediately after Bill O'Brien gets the opportunity at BC, almost immediately, Ohio State's hiring Chip Kelly as their offensive coordinator. I mean, they knew it was coming. So, I don't know.
On a scale, Mike, from couldn't have done any worse to couldn't have done any better for Boston College, where does this hire fall in your mind?
They certainly could have done worse.
Oh, totally. I won't argue that for a second.
Certainly could have done worse. I don't know who they're hiring that's better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. Like, they went from Jagodzinski. Did they go from Jagodzinski to Addazio? They had somebody in between, didn't they?
Yeah, it feels like there was somebody in between. Give me a second, I'll find out.
Yeah, somebody's going to be screaming at their computer, radio, whatever. It just, I don't know who they could have gotten at, especially at this stage of the cycle, too. Like, again, you got to remember, this is a really tough time to go and hire a college football coach.
Yeah, yeah, the timing is weird. And we talked about with Dan on the previous podcast is like, do you try to make a full-time hire at this moment, or do you just stick with somebody internal, have an interim year, and then figure it out in November, December of 24? Like, I think that's a valid option. And also, it was Jagodzinski. He didn't resign. Was he fired? Was he shown the door? I don't know.
That was the whole thing where he was flirting with a NFL job.
The Jets or something. Yeah.
And the AD hated that he did that. And that was
so then he was gone. And Frank Spaziani came in for 4 years.
Thank you. Spaziani.
So it was Jagodzinski, then Spaziani, then Addazio. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I knew we were missing someone there. Spaziani, of course. Okay. So, I mean, just look at kind of the recent history. Like, I don't know who they would have done better, especially when you consider like time in the cycle. But even if they went that route that you just mentioned, where they like kind of hire almost like an extended interim and then kind of roll the dice again next year, kind of, I don't want to say similar to what Georgia Tech did with Brent Key, but like if Georgia Tech did not play particularly well this year under Key, like, do you think they would have considered, and I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but like if it was like real bad, right, coming off of an interim situation last year where they kind of made him the full-time coach, and then if he flamed out, like, I don't think Georgia Tech would have been afraid to pull the plug potentially. Now, it's a money, there's a money thing at play at Georgia Tech, and I fully acknowledge that, but like just from a theoretical standpoint.
Well, and what I'm thinking, if it had been like bad, like 2-10, 1-11, you know, something awful.
Yeah.
The contract was structured in a way that like, you probably could have figured out a way out of it, you know, like
right.
Even after just 1 year.
Like, so that's kind of the parallel I'm trying to draw with BC. Mm-hmm. Like if BC did that, even if they went that route and like whoever the interim, Al Washington, great example, was on the staff, make him the interim, make him like whatever. Mm-hmm. Didn't work out, let him go. Even if they get in the cycle early, like what are they doing at BC? Like direction of hiring. Dan didn't even know going into this.
Yeah.
Are they doing kind of what they did last time, like an up-and-coming like assistant coach? Are they going to hire a coordinator from P5? Are they hiring a G5 head coach, you know, kind of doing what Syracuse did with Dino? Like, is that what they're doing? So I'm a fan of the hire because we've seen him have success at both levels, college and the NFL. We've seen him have recent college success as a coordinator. Obviously, he's highly thought of from an X's and O's standpoint, from Belichick to Saban to Ryan Day, who wanted to have him as his OC. Like, I think from a game preparation standpoint, I think BC will be prepared. I think they'll be tough to play against, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The question for me is recruiting. Like, mm-hmm. what's recruiting going to look like? It's going to certainly look different from Jeff Hafley. Mm-hmm. And they were recruiting at a really high level, and they weren't putting it together on the field at a level that you would expect with the types of kids they were recruiting. We hadn't seen it in, you know, the last three cycles when they were recruiting really well for Boston College. I think O'Brien's going to get more out of that type of talent. The question is, like, is he going to land the high three stars and low fours in a way that Hafley was? That's the biggest question for me.
Yeah.
Biggest question is the recruiting piece.
Totally valid. I tweeted out something shortly after the news became official that that Boston College was hiring Bill O'Brien. And I basically said, I think that Syracuse has a better chance of hitting their ceiling as a program under Fran Brown than Boston College has under Bill O'Brien. And that, you know, writing that out sounds like it's a little bit of a, you know, it's a bait on the end of a fishing line. You know, I'm trying to hook someone in. What I meant by that, Mike, was I feel like there's an unknown to Fran Brown that he's extremely well regarded as a recruiter. And there is a decent shot that he can get Syracuse's roster as good as it could possibly be.
From a talent standpoint in
college football 2024, 2025, you know, the modern era. And as a head coach, he's a total unknown, which means he might be awful. He might be really good.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
There's an unknown, like, range there that the ceiling could be really, really high. To me, Bill O'Brien is in a way kind of a known quantity.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is that I don't think that Boston College under Bill O'Brien is ever going to be bad.
Right.
Like, I think worst case, you're probably talking about like 4-8 on a given year. Like, I think almost year over year, they're going to be a bowl team, like 6-6. But my thing with Bill O'Brien is, like, when's the last time that you saw Bill O'Brien associated with an offense that you're like, they're doing something really creative, new, unusual, like fancy?
Not new and unusual. I mean, the time at Alabama with Bryce Young is like the development of Bryce Young is, I think, what you point to.
Did he develop that much?
He was his coordinator for the two of the years.
Okay. Fine.
One of the Heisman Trophy, they averaged 40 points per game. Right?
He has never been like an innovator in the last 15 years, schematically.
It's not, and nothing they were doing at Alabama was like overly innovative.
Mm-hmm.
They were good. They were very good. I mean, it's not even good. They were very good.
It's effective. It works.
Mm-hmm.
But like the whole thing with the Texans, right? Like he was the head coach, and I kind of forget, but there were times that he was the play caller. There was times he wasn't. Like sometimes George Godsey was the OC. Sometimes he was just the quarterback coach. I can't really remember it. It seemed like it fluctuated like every year, but like they were never bad.
Yeah.
And even at times prior to Deshaun Watson joining there, like they were able to cobble together like playoff resumes with Ryan Fitzpatrick and some like rando dudes at quarterback and stuff. Like he could cobble some stuff together and get
an NFL team to
the playoffs. Yeah.
He's going to have to do that at BC too, right? Like,
and that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. He's going to have to do that because there's going to be years where you're just from a talent standpoint. I don't care how well you're recruiting. From a talent standpoint, you're going to be at a disadvantage from some of the other schools in the ACC because you can't recruit the type. Hafley did a good job recruiting, mm-hmm. but this isn't like a top 30 program from a recruiting standpoint. Mm-hmm. It never has been.
Nope. Full stop. Nope.
So you're going to have to cobble it together every year. And some years you're really going to have to cobble it together. And I think he's going to get the most out of the talent he has, but like, I think he's going to get more. If he's able to recruit like Hafley, he's going to get more out of it. I think they're going to be better coached than they were under Jeff Hafley. If they can recruit kind of how they did under Hafley, then I think you have an 8-win ceiling. You have some years maybe a 9-win ceiling. Maybe you're like a top third of the conference team. And okay, are you in? It's a 12-team playoff now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think BC is competing for a 12-team playoff, but are they a fringe top 25 team? I think they can be on some of their better years, for sure.
Given year, sure, yeah.
Yeah, so what more can you ask for at Boston College?
So all I'm saying is, yes, O'Brien's, his track record and what he is and who he is, Boston College will at least be a bowl-eligible team basically year in and year out. Like, there is a chance that they miss a bowl game here or there on a quarterback injury or, you know, something kind of fluky happens. But, like,
right.
This is a high floor hire for Boston College.
They will very never high be, floor.
They will never be bad under Bill O'Brien. My thing is that he's not Jamie Chadwell, or he's not, like, someone who's going to do something schematically that will take a team that is average from a talent standpoint and elevate them to win 9-10 games and all of a sudden maybe make the playoff or something. I think this is a high floor, low ceiling hire is what I'm saying this is. And I'm not saying that's wrong, you know, or not saying it's right. Like, I'm just, that's what I think it is. I think you could have done someone that will get you higher, but they will never be bad. They will never be bad under Bill O'Brien.
My other thing too is, like, do you necessarily, and your points are well taken for sure. My next question is, like, do you necessarily have to be innovative to get the absolute most out of the talent you have at BC? Or do you simply just have to be a better football coach? This is what I mean by that. Think of the coaches they've had recently, right? Spaziani, who I forgot about, right? We just had this conversation 10 minutes ago. We were talking about this. I forgot about Spaziani. His teams were decent. Jack Kaczynski's teams were decent. Adazio, consistently a bowl team. And Hafley got into bowl games. But they've been a 7-win program for a really long time, right? So by just coaching the X's and O's, and Bill O'Brien, by the way, he's got a resume better than any of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get more out of the talent that you have just from a straight X's and O's standpoint by just doing what you've always done? Do you necessarily have to be innovative to take Boston College to, like, a level greater than they're at right now? Maybe you have to be an innovator and have, like, a different offense. Maybe you have to be like a Chadwell with what he built at Coastal and what he's doing at Liberty now. Like, maybe you have to be a Chadwell to all of a sudden, like, take any talent and take them, like, 10, 11 wins or something. Maybe you have to be that to reach the absolute ceiling. But also, like, what if O'Brien just goes in and coaches X's and O's better than the guys that have come before him with average talent? Like, what if he just coaches them better? Those were 6 and 7 win teams with those coaches. None of them were doing anything innovative, right?
Yeah.
Like, what if he just coaches them a little bit better with just more standard stuff that it's more vanilla, right? Like, Chadwell's got the pistol option run and shoot thing that's, like, very difficult to defend. Mm-hmm. But, like, O'Brien runs, like, the run in the mill, like, spread offense at the college level that's been effective everywhere he's been with more talent. Like,
yeah.
What if he just coaches that a little bit better at BC? Can he get BC to an 8 or 9 win ceiling? That's what I'm curious about, and that's the question we're going to get an answer to.
Yep, absolutely.
And it's going to give credence to your point too about they should have gone for someone more innovative too. I mean, we're going to get the answer to that. We're going to know, like, if he's just winning 7 or 8 games a year, we're going to be like, okay, maybe the next guy is the innovative hire.
And I don't want to say that they should have gone for someone more innovative. What I'm saying is that I think this hire limits your ceiling. I think you could have a higher ceiling. Does someone recruit better than Bill O'Brien? Maybe. Recruiting at Boston College in 2024 is so wildly different than recruiting at Penn State in 2012 and 2013. Just
like I said, it's like when Christ walked the earth is what I think I said to Dan Rubin.
Yeah, like on every level, not only what Penn State was going through at the time, but that's Penn State versus Boston College, and it's 2012 and 2013 college football versus 2024 college. Like, it's such a different discussion.
Everything's different. Everything is different.
Everything. Like, you know, and so I think there are higher variance, higher ceiling hires you could have made, i.e., again, Fran Brown, I think, is a higher variance, potential higher ceiling guy. But again, I think this is a high floor, you'll never be bad, you'll never be embarrassed kind of thing, where, I mean, this is a guy who, again, for, what, 5 years with the Texans, he won the AFC South 4 of the 5 times, and the 1 year in between, Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt both tore the ACLs in the first month and a half of the season. Like,
right.
You know, this guy has overseen some positive, you know, good football at the very highest level.
Ball coach. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you could do a hell of a lot worse than this. So,
yeah.
Credit to Boston College. That's good. I don't know exactly how well it'll go, but again, you'll never be bad.
And the culture will be pretty good. I mean, aside from he's from Massachusetts, just if you can rebuild the culture at Penn State with what they went through, you could. That's like an ice to an Eskimo thing in terms of, like, conceptually, like, how you can build a program. Like, he's shown that he can do it in the worst possible situation. And I just feel like, obviously, he's not walking into a situation quite as dire, right, as he was walking to at Penn State over a decade ago. It's a lot different. But I just think the culture is never going to be real bad, I don't think. And the team's going to be well coached. And couple that with the fact that he's from there, I just think it's a good hire. I think it's a very good hire.
Last thing I'll say, and we talked a little bit with Dan about this. I think it was on the recording. I can't remember. We talked a lot with Dan tonight, but the one thing I'll say, having lived in Houston throughout his entire tenure here with the Texans, he had an odd relationship with the media here, and he can be a bit of a prickly guy and has a little bit of that air about him that he feels like he's the smartest guy in the room. Don't know how that plays in college versus the NFL. But one of the things we talked a little bit with Dan about was, I mean, that plays very differently in Boston and in Boston culture versus in the South, you know, and kind of being direct and being a little bit confrontational might play much more normally and comfortably in Boston than it did here in Houston. I think local media got a little bit irritated trying to get anything out of him because he was they kind of came across combative. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think ultimately, I'm not going to say this is a bad hire. Good hire, and Boston College, you could have done a hell of a lot worse than this.
With you.
So, Mike, a couple other newsy things. What do you think?
Quickly. We'll do it quickly.
Yeah, do it quickly.
It's late. Yeah.
Biggest newsy things we have to hit on, and it's odd that we feel like we have to hit on this, but a position coach has left the college ranks and gone to the NFL. And I say that we have to hit on this because this is Pitt defensive line coach Charlie Partridge. And if you're unaware of who he is, he's been with Pitt since 2017 under Pat Narduzzi, which is almost the entirety of the Narduzzi era. And if you start doing a little bit of mental math, you might come up with the fact that Pitt has taken in just a boatload of, like, 3-star grade defensive linemen and turn them into NFL, like, first 2 to 3 round draft picks and guys that have, you know, led or damn near led the ACC in sacks and tackles for loss. And, like, this program has developed monster defensive linemen after monster defensive linemen. And it feels like a lot of that development has been attributed to Charlie Partridge. And as some of what we've talked about recently of, you know, this trend of moving from college to the NFL, Charlie Partridge is part of that. And I just feel like that is a concerning move for Pittsburgh, that that is a hard guy to replace and get equivalent production from a coaching standpoint.
And it's been an average defense for the last two seasons now.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a decent defense when they won the ACC title with Kenny Pickett, but it's been kind of a weird defense the last 2 years. Not nearly as good up front, which is interesting because we're speaking about their defensive line coach leaving. They weren't getting home up front the last two seasons in the way that they had in years past. They've had some issues in the secondary. It just hasn't been as strong of a defensive unit. They haven't been terrible, but they haven't been great either. And they're in a spot now where you lose a guy who's been with Narduzzi, who's one of his most trusted assistants on the defensive side of the ball, and he's jumping to the NFL. That is a huge name to replace on a team that's really predicated on how they play defense, right? If they play well defensively, short of that ACC title year, that this has been a defensively minded program under Narduzzi. Of course it would be. He's a former defensive coordinator.
Yep.
So I think this is a pretty significant loss. We'll see how it plays out in the fall and how the defensive line looks, how the defense as a whole looks coming off of a down year for Narduzzi. But, you know, we talked to Jim Hammett on the early signing day back in December, and he mentioned that, you know, Narduzzi obviously has built up enough goodwill that they should be okay. Mm-hmm. We talked to him very briefly.
On signing day, and I still can't believe that we asked him to do that and that he did it. Yeah. So,
yeah. And, you know, you mentioned Narduzzi isn't really in any sort of trouble, but this is the kind of stuff that starts happening though, right? Where like you have a bad year and then you lose a couple assistants or whatever, and then all of a sudden it's starting to go downhill. I mean, Pitt's already trying to figure out the offensive side of the ball, right? They got some questions there. So it's just, you know, just something to monitor.
Yep. Two things real quick. First of all, if it wasn't clear at this point, Mike, this is by definition a Pitt football podcast, as you'll note by me wearing my beautiful new home field apparel shirt showing the score of a just glorious game in Pitt football history.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that again one day soon. Number two, Pat Narduzzi has named Tim Doust the replacement there for Charlie Partridge on the defensive line coach. And I feel like it's worth pointing out that Tim Doust, his last name has six letters. Three of them are vowels, and they're all in a row. D-A-O-U-S-T. So that's a lot of vowels in a row, but it somehow works.
More vowels than games Pitt won last year.
This is nothing if not a Pitt and spelling podcast. So thank you.
And it's just, I mean, it's just math. It's just, it's a fact. I don't know. It's just math.
That's just math. Mike, we also got news this week that the NCAA moving forward with incorporating some sideline technology, I guess, that has been available in the NFL for, I don't know, a decade or more. There's been like memes of quarterbacks on the sidelines spiking tablets and stuff, and people all pissed off and stuff. And then like you watch college football and we've got these signs with like emojis and stuff that people are holding up on the sidelines and all that stuff. Like, yeah, it's ridiculous. Seems like we might be modernizing college football a little bit during the game. How do you feel about that?
It's fine. You won't have a Connor Stallion situation.
Then what are we going to name awards after, Mike?
The next one will be more elaborate, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we named an award after Kobe Bryant, the former Queen of England, and Brian Van Gorder. I think we'll be just fine.
Connor Stallions is honored to be in that esteemed group of people.
The You Lied Award or whatever we're calling it.
The Connor Stallions Steal of the Week.
Actually. Steal of the Week, thank you.
What it was, yeah. Yeah, very much a like an about time kind of situation of like, what were we doing before? And it seems like, you know, there's nobody in the ACC. I mean, I feel like programs that are opposed to this are like aggressively underfunded that like can't handle this, or you know, feel like this would be like an anti-competitive thing, but like everyone in the ACC can handle this from a financial standpoint, putting a headset in the quarterback's helmet and the middle linebacker's helmet or whatever, like you'll figure that out. And
maybe not Wake Forest, but
well, they just like leave their playbooks on the sidelines, right, and let other people.
There it is. That's right. Yeah. There it is. That's there right. It is. There. That's right. Anyways. Shout out Shane Beamer.
That was hang on. That was Petrino. That's Petrino Louisville, wasn't it?
Yes, I think so. Well, yeah, because Shane was on Frank's staff. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was Petrino time frame. Yep.
WikiLeaks. That was a good time in this podcast history. All right.
It was. That was post motorcycle accident.
Yeah. Right, so shout out to Connor Stallions. No more decoding the four emojis on the big poster board on the sidelines anymore.
Moving on to something. Yeah. Moving on to something other in sports.
That's right. That's right. Last thing, Mike, we got really, honestly, the biggest news of the day that we got today is that our lives are going to get way, way better. Starting, well, there's a full reveal in May, and then I assume in early July.
Yeah, I'm going to be putting all parental duties aside. So,
locking yourself in a room.
I haven't run that by my wife yet, but I think it's just something I'm going to have to do. The EA Sports college football game is coming back, and I know there's been rumors about it. They've already, they've been talking about a 2024 release for the better part of 2 years. There were people online saying, is this game really coming back? Because it's February. We haven't heard anything until today. There was a trailer that came out today. There's a full reveal coming in May, and the game is going to be released in June. So if you're a sicko like me and you're ready to lead like Arkansas Pine Bluff to a national championship, then you better get all jazzed up. You have a few months left of, work and raising children. And whatever else you do in your free time while you're listening to this podcast, you have a little bit more time to get that done. I expect our listenership numbers to decline a little bit because I think everybody will just be too busy playing the game. Gonna be busy. So just plan your summer vacations around the video game release and just, be careful in terms of time management is what I would say.
Sorry, I'm busy writing that down. I have to remind myself because I might absolutely fall in that hole here in a few months. Looking forward to it.
Yes. Yeah. Down the rabbit hole we go.
There were a couple of stray group texts about, possibly having some sort of hypothetical listener online dynasty situation. We don't know what the features of the game are at this
point.
Not
yet.
We are unlikely have time, to do this as people, but if you're interested, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com, the first people to get in are probably the likely ones to get in on it actually, if such a thing is possible. So
the Andrew Parkers of the world, the Chris Grondins of the world, the Stevens of Section 103 of the world. Like, those are the people who are probably going to get in quick because we know they're going to, there's listeners I'm forgetting. They're going to be real salty.
Mm-hmm.
But those are people we're going to hear from first.
That's right.
I feel it.
That's right. So hit us up if you're interested.
Keith Derrick. I'll throw him into.
Keith Derrick. That's right. That's right. Yep. Yeah. There's people we're forgetting for sure. And I apologize if we are.
It's 1:30 in the morning.
Eastern. On that note, Mike, should we get out of here?
Yeah, we should.
I'm going to come back and keep doing some state of the team, state of the
program. Yeah, we're calling it that too. I don't know if people. So what happened is Joey and I took a while to record, the season recaps, and now we're leaking into spring practice here starting soon. So we're just calling this the state of the program series, and that's what we're going to continue to call it in the off seasons to come. So there we go. There's the announcement.
I lost my voice for like a week, and it's only mostly back. So
yeah, you weren't on the last podcast I recorded with David Cunningham, Tech Sideline. He missed you.
Mm-hmm.
we had an opportunity to discuss our record predictions for Virginia Tech. David and I said 5-7. You said 4-8. We brought that up, how we were all wrong somehow.
You guys are really high on the Hokies in 2024, too.
Dude, why? First in the country in returning production from a 7-win team. Wouldn't you be jazzed up, too?
We'll talk about that next time.
Give me some hope, Joey. Give me some hope for 8 wins.
I think 8 wins totally on the table, by the way.
Okay. Okay. Like, that's good.
High returning production. Yeah. Good. Good. Yeah. Good stuff for okay. Fry.
Sounds yes. good.
Go with that.
Okay. Cool.
In the meantime, y'all can find us on Twitter at FGRS.
Give me the Mayo Bowl. Give me the Mayo Bowl, Joey. Give me the Mayo Bowl.
That's success criteria. The success criteria is Mayo Bowl or better, for sure. For sure. At FGRS Joey, at Mike McDaniel SI, together at BC Podcast ACC, at BC Dan Rubin for our guy Dan. If you're trying to find any sort of Boston College news, he's got you. Basketball Conference Podcast at gmail.com.
Nailed it.
Thank you. iTunes, Spotify. Is it still iTunes? Apple Music?
Apple Music. Yeah.
Google Music, YouTube Premium, whatever that is. Spotify. Anywhere you find your podcast, go find us there.
Facebook, Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rate, review, subscribe.
YouTube.com/@the ACC Football Podcast. Hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, hit the bell icon for more. And we appreciate that. Mike, anything else?
We are good.
Come back soon. Talk some more ACC football.
Let's do it.
Love it. All right. For that guy, Mr. Mike McDaniel, for Mr. Dan Rubin, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk again very, very soon. Until then, go ACC.